So tonight we will continue with chapter 73. What is 73 called? Lord Krishna blesses liberated kings. Okay. So chapter 73, verses 18 to 35. We'll finish the chapter. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "From now on, my dear kings, you will have firm devotion to me, the Supreme Self, and the Lord of all that be. I assure you, this will come to pass just as you desire." So there is no commentary there, but Krishna Chakravarti Thakur has a purport on this verse. He points out that the duty of any leader is to spread pure bhakti, or pure devotion to Krishna. So all of us are leaders, right, in our lives and in ISKCON, to different degrees. We don't all have the same level of responsibility, but we're all leaders. Even if you're a mother, then you're a leader. You're leading your child. Doesn't matter, everyone is a leader to some capacity. So the duty of every leader is to spread pure devotional service, pure bhakti. Now, pure devotional service needs to be learnt from our gurus. It is only by associating with your gurus, with the advanced devotees, that you learn pure devotional service. Otherwise, it will remain theoretical, unless you can see it displayed. So the duty of the leader is to teach pure devotional service. How to serve Krishna without motivation and without interruption. Now, that's called ahoituki apratihata. This is the Bhagavad Gita's message. That's the definition of pure devotional service. Pure devotional service is uninterrupted, and it is unmotivated. Otherwise, it is not pure. If we're doing it for some other reason other than Krishna's pleasure, it is not pure devotional service. And if it's interrupted, it's also not pure devotional service. So, to be unmotivated means the best way to do that is to preach Krishna consciousness. You have to spread Krishna consciousness. You have to take up responsibility. You really only advance rapidly in ISKCON, in the Hare Krishna movement. We all joined ISKCON. And everyone in ISKCON is advancing. Unless you're committing offenses, or then you're going backwards. You're not advancing in devotional service. But if you want to advance, and most of us are advancing at some level, your advancement becomes more rapid when you take up responsibility to spread the Hare Krishna movement. When you take up the burden of spreading the Hare Krishna movement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that, "I am a gardener and I have so many fruits." And he asks all of his followers, his assistants, to please help him spread or distribute the fruits of love of Godhead. And Prabhupada was a major distributor. And Prabhupada, he once said to Burujan Prabhu, actually, he said, "I have a desire. I want every living entity in this universe to become Krishna conscious. Please help me." Prabhupada said like that. That was his vision. Another pastime I've told you before, you may have seen on the Memories videos, if you've watched them. Have you anyone watched the Memories videos? There's all the Prabhupada's disciples And they just speak about Prabhupada for hours and hours and hours. There's videos which are there. Goes for hundreds, thousands of hours.
Right.
So they all speak about pastimes of Prabhupada, things that you may not have heard before. So one disciple, I just can't quite remember the Prabhu's name, but you know, he came in and this is like 67, is back before ISKCON was big. There's only 80 devotees in the whole movement. He came in and Prabhupada was sitting down, like up there. Prabhupada sits down low desk. And Prabhupada said, he looked at there, Prabhupada said, "Do you see that ant?" And the devotee is looking, and he couldn't see an ant. But then he thought in his mind, he was confused, you know, maybe there is an ant there, but I can't see it. Maybe there's no ant there, Prabhupada is just testing me. Maybe the ant is spiritual. But I don't have the vision to see the ant. So Prabhupada's testing me. So he didn't know what to say. Because he thought, if I say yes, then maybe that's wrong. If I say no, maybe that's wrong. So he said, "You know." He didn't say yes or no, he just go, "You know," both. The Prabhupada continued. And Prabhupada said, "Our only," there wasn't an ant there, but Prabhupada was making a point. Prabhupada was saying, "Our only purpose is to liberate that ant from the cycle of birth and death." He said, "You must assist that ant to become Krishna conscious. You give prasadam, one grain of prasadam, you'll take a human birth," Prabhupada said that. So it's your duty to liberate. So that's the mood. And that's when you make advancement in Krishna consciousness. I mean, we all advance, but when you take up responsibility for preaching, then you make a rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness. So we want to make rapid advancement because time is short. So take up responsibility. Take up the burden. You know that your service is of the right level of surrender when it becomes uncomfortable and a little painful and a little austere. You know, when you really have to push yourself, you know, to do service. You know? And we're very fortunate in this temple because this temple is like a, there's many ways to describe it, but it's an intense temple comparatively to other temples. Other temples aren't as intense as this one. And if you get involved in the preaching, it becomes very intense, actually. You know, but then once you get a taste for that, you can't give that up. You know, because that's how we advance in Krishna consciousness. We want to advance. You have to take up responsibility. So either you preach or you assist the preachers. Right? Both are noticed by Lord Chaitanya. You know, not everyone has the ability, natural ability to give classes and all those things. It's okay. Or distribute books. But then you have to support the preachers. Now, if you can't do anything else, then give money to the preachers. Give money to the temple so they can spread, you know, Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So then, in any way you can, then spread the movement. So either directly or indirectly, but you'll get the benefit if that's the motivation. That's how you advance in Krishna consciousness. So it says here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes the point, the kings, they wanted to spread pure bhakti, and that's the duty of the king. And that's why you see the whole Mahabharata war, which is going to take place soon. You know, because as we said a few weeks back, Bhagavatam and Mahabharata are now colliding. You know, the Kurus and the Yadus. You know, this is the story of the Yadus, Bhagavatam, because Krishna is a Yadava. And the Kurus, that's the Mahabharata, that's Yudhishthira and the brothers, they're about to all merge. So we're seeing the two pastimes come together. So, what is the point? Why did Krishna insist on a war? Why would you insist on a war? Because he wanted to remove the king who was not going to establish pure devotional service around the planet. So he had to, so there was no other opportunity, no other way to remove him. We tried everything else. We tried to be reasonable many times, in many ways, and still they would not cooperate. So then finally there was no other option. Right? So then Krishna arranged the war. Right? And he just killed, earlier in this chapter, who did he get rid of?
Jarasandha.
Jarasandha. Right? This was a big impediment, this person. You know, we don't really understand. We just read the books and just say, oh, Jarasandha. And, you know, when you do your exam, you know, you just go, oh, Jarasandha. Like that. We don't really understand how powerful these people were and how powerful Jarasandha and what a influence he had on the earth. You know? But he had to be removed. Bhima was given the service to remove him. Because Bhima is a pure devotee. Yeah. So a pure devotee establishes pure devotional service. There are 26 qualities of the devotee. Lord Chaitanya teaches Sanatana Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And out of all the qualities, what is the most important?
Expert.
Daksha. That's not the most important quality. What's the most important quality? 25 are Tatashta Lakshana, and one is Sarup Lakshana.
Surrender to Krishna.
Surrender to Krishna, yeah. What is the Sanskrit for that?
Krishna.
Krishnaika Sharana. Yeah. Krishnaika Sharana, which is the Param Shloki in Bhagavad Gita. No? Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. Krishnaika Sharana. Surrender unto Krishna alone. That is the most important quality. All right, there are 26 qualities. The other 25, you may have them to a small degree or a large degree. They're tatashta, they're additional qualities. But that quality every pure devotee has. So Bhima, he didn't display all the 26 qualities. One of the 26 qualities is mild. Very like mild. You understand mild? It's like calm and mild. He wasn't like that. That wasn't his quality. Fully surrendered to Krishna, he was like that. So Krishna used his power to destroy Jarasandha, to remove him. You know, he had to rip him apart. You know, no one else could do that. You know, someone who's as strong as Jarasandha had to do it. I mean, Krishna or Balaram could have done it, but they like to let the devotees perform the pastimes and be remembered for these things. Yeah. But Bhima was a pure devotee of Krishna, always fully surrendered to Krishna. So they had to be established. Yudhishthira, and that's what this is leading up to. The Rajasuya sacrifice that's coming up in the next few chapters. Yudhishthira was being established as the emperor of the earth. So, Krishna blessed them. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that Krishna blessed the kings to become steady in their practice of bhakti. Steadiness is the fifth level of devotional service. There are 9 levels of bhakti. Shraddha. Shraddha means?
Faith.
Sadhu Sangha. Then? Vajana Kriya. Then? Anatta Nivritti. Then? Nishtha. So that's the fifth. Krishna blessed, you become steady. We have to develop this quality of nishtha. Nishtha means steady, fixed, every day, every week, every month, every year we just do our service. We don't disappear, we don't fluctuate. Right? Balaram Prabhu, the temple president before Aniruddha Prabhu, then he asked Prabhupada up there. He said, what is the qualification for someone to take second initiation in ISKCON? First initiation, you know, we say that's Harinam initiation. In ISKCON, we call it Harinam initiation. You get the holy name and all that. Second initiation, actually, second initiation is more important on one level, in different ways. Some you could say both ways, but it's considered more important in some ways. But interesting, Prabhupada said not everyone needs to take second initiation. No, not everyone. No, you don't have to force every single devotee to take second initiation. It's not necessary for every devotee. You can still go back to Godhead even with that second. But in some ways, and for most of us, we can achieve it, so we should achieve it. So that second initiation, Balaram Prabhu said, what is the qualification? Prabhupada said, steady. The devotee has to be steady. You have to be fixed. That's called nishtha. You have to be fixed in devotional service. You can't just, oh, I feel like doing my service today, but I don't want to do it tomorrow. I'll chant my rounds today, but I won't chant them tomorrow like that. You can't be like that in devotional service. You have to be steady and fixed. And that's how you begin to progress in devotional service. No. And this platform of steadiness comes when you come to that platform of Trinada, Pisu, Nichina, Dura, Pisu, that third verse of Shikshastika. That's the gateway to steadiness in devotional service. Right? And then you can progress to the further levels. So we need to become steady, fixed up in devotional service. Because if you don't become steady, then you won't get ruchi, you won't get asakti, you won't get bhava. And bhava is the sadhya. Sadhya means the goal. Yeah, and then you won't get prema. If you don't have bhava, you can't get prema. If you have bhava when you die, bhava bhakti, then you go to the universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes, you get trained up by the Brijbasis, and then they give you prema. They teach you prema. So that's the sadhya, is bhava. It's the goal for us. And then that leads to prema bhakti, which is pure, unalloyed devotional service, fully absorbed in Krishna. So we have to become fixed. So Krishna blessed the kings. He said, he blessed them, you will become steady in your practice of bhakti, and by this steadiness, prema will appear. So we have to become steady in devotional service, fixed up. Just like we always come to these classes. And many of you are steady, year after year after year after year. Yeah, a few of you have been here since the beginning. You know, back in 1973, whenever it was, 2003, when we started. I write on, whenever I prepare my classes, I write lesson number. This lesson is 776. 776 classes. And that doesn't include Bhakti Shastri. So Bhakti Shastri, we do class as well. Bhakti Shastri would have been 100 or probably more than 100. So it's a lot of classes. We're steady, we're fixed. We keep coming again and again. And this is the price we have to pay to attain higher levels of bhakti. You know, if we can't remain steady and fixed, then... So to become steady and fixed, you have to get a taste for devotional service. You can't just do it out of like obligation or like that. You have to, there has to be a taste. You know, we get nectar. The goal of devotional service is to experience amrita. Amrita means nectar. There has to be nectar in devotional service. Ananda buddhi vartanam. If you're not getting that bliss, that taste, and then you won't perform the bhakti. So we have to get that taste, and then we'll keep coming again and again. For us, it's not like a austerity to do this. You know, we look forward to it. Any points? Yes, sir.
In this instance, Krishna has said that he will have firm devotion to me.
Yeah.
Which means Krishna is giving them the firmness or steadiness. Is this something what we have to endow, or is this something Krishna actually endowed upon us?
It's a good question. It's something we have to do. But there's something called blessings, kripa. And kripa, when you get a blessing, it assists or it accelerates or it removes obstacles or and may allow you to get to places which would have been much more difficult and taken much more time by yourself. So when a great soul blesses you, then, and I think all of us have experienced that. You know, I can think back very clearly of times when I got blessings from devotees. You know, I could see a senior devotee was happy and it changed things, you know, quite profoundly in my devotional service. And I've also seen times when senior devotees were displeased with me, and that also had an impact in my devotional service. It held me back from certain things. One time I was at a Bhaktivedanta ashram at Govardhan Hill. We call it the palace, my Guru Maharaj's ashram. I was there and one sannyasi walked past me. Early in the morning, I was chanting japa. He walked past me and obviously there was something in his heart. He was not happy. And as soon as you walk past, like all the taste, and I was getting some taste in my chanting, I was really feeling some reciprocation of Krishna, just went, disappeared. Like the moment he passed by, because obviously there was a thought there, and then you probably thought, who is this guy? And then bang, just all the taste went, and I couldn't get it back for a period of time. You know, because obviously I displeased the personality, so everything was removed. And similarly, you know, I remember clearly one time I was chanting the same thing at Govardhan Hill, but further down towards Punjab. One very powerful sannyasi in our movement walked past, and he just looked at me and smiled, and then so many things, you know, increased and improved and like that. So it's just blessings. So you want to get blessings. You want to get blessings from Krishna, from the devotees, from the guru. And that helps. Does that answer? Yeah, it's our endeavor, but blessings are very, very powerful. Act in such a way that you'll get the blessings of the devotees. Any other point?
In verse 15.
Yes, sir.
In verse 15,
yeah.
The kings had essentially requested Lord Krishna to instruct them.
Yeah.
And in this particular verse, the Lord is responding to the mood of the kings. In their humility, though Lord Krishna was in front of them, they did not assume that they had attained perfection of life. Rather, they asked Lord Krishna to instruct them on principles of sadhana bhakti, even if they have to continue in the cycle of birth and death. So the Lord is extremely pleased in that, with that mood of humility of these kings, though despite the fact that they saw him. And then the Lord is saying in this verse that because you asked me in that way, therefore now I am instructing you. And then the Lord instructs them on the principles of Aidi Sadhana Bhakti, and then with the promise that they will eventually come to the platform of Nishtha and then further on to Prema Bhakti. This is very similar also to the mood which we studied many years back when Vidur was there on the planet, and you had explained to us that though Krishna was in the planet daily, still when Duryodhan insulted Vidur, he just did not stick directly go and meet Krishna. He went on a pilgrimage. And then you had explained to us that that is the way of seeing Krishna. Not that he has just come in front of us, therefore that is good enough. He has to be seen through the process of sadhana bhakti, to service to devotees and to hear. So here the kings are not taking their fortune for granted just because they had darshan of Krishna. They are seeking that process, which is, that mood is very pleasing to them. Which you said just now, the Srinada Pishamacharya.
Nice. Thank you. Very good. Any other point? Okay. Fortunately, you have come to the proper conclusion, my dear kings, and what you have spoken is true. I can see that human beings' lack of self-restraint, which arises from their intoxication with opulence and power, simply leads to
madness.
So, what are we mad for in the material world? Sense gratification. And?
Pratishtha.
Pratishtha. And?
What's Pratishtha?
Fame.
Well, this one.
Yeah. Very good. Bhogai Shwaya Prasaktanam. Krishna says in Gita, Bhoga and Aishwarya. That's what makes us mad in this world. We want to enjoy the Bhoga. The Bhoga means sense gratification. Bhaktaram jagyatapasam. Krishna is meant to enjoy the bhoga. It's meant to be offered to him. It's not for us. You know, we cook in the kitchen just like now. The offering's going to go on in a few minutes. So I think Brijbhasa Prabhu saw in that. So he's cooking for... So he's never going to eat the bhoga before it's offered to Krishna, because the bhoga is for Krishna's. That's why we do all this sadhana bhakti. That's why we offer to the Lord, to get us out of the habit of being the enjoyer the primary enjoyer to be the secondary enjoyer. We're still enjoyers, but it's secondary. Krishna has to take the offering, then we can take the prasad. And no other devotee can take it either. You know, devotees would never let anyone try to take Krishna's bhoga. Right? We shouldn't even meditate on the bhoga before it gets offered to Krishna. Sometimes we do. You know, we're already meditating. Even devotees, what are you cooking tonight? Who cares what you're cooking? It's none of your business. That's for Krishna. And then when there's cheese, when there's pizza, everyone comes. That's sense gratification. What about when there's, some pakora or something like that? And no, people aren't as interested. You see, when particular offerings, it's actually just cheese. That one element, cheese, when that's in the offering, everyone starts going, turn into sharks. I've seen, I've been in there. You're going to get some, I try not to go in because we've actually been instructed by the temple management we should not go in and take from in there, we should wait for it to come out. Occasionally I do because, I get here late and I need something to eat, and so I go in and grab something. I've even been in there. I'm one of the more senior devotees in the temple. I've been in there and I've been, go to get something, and like some other, junior devotee just comes in, like grabs it. I'm about to grab it, and he just puts his hand and just like, some cheesy kind of pizza-y thing or something like that. They become like frenzied. But that's bulga, that's sense gratification. Prabhupada actually says we should not take prasadam for sense gratification. That's why Prabhupada said we honor prasadam. Remember I said, when Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote that invitation in 1968 or 69 or around about that time. And then he said, come and take prasadam or eat prasadam. And Prabhupada said, no, honor prasadam. He made him change the writing on the invitation. Prabhupada said we should not, the mood should be correct when we take prasadam. You should always honor it. You should never have shoes on. We've done classes in the past about honoring prasadam. You should never have shoes on. So I say devotees all the time, just standing. It says you shouldn't stand when you take prasadam. It says that. It's like, at Indian weddings, everyone stands around and, so you sometimes see the temple, everyone's just standing around like that. It's not appropriate. It's the Lord's prasad. It says you shouldn't have shoes on, you should sit down, you should honor. When we go to Jagannath Puri, we take it even further, right? It says in Puri, you shouldn't even sit on an asana, not even a mat, you should sleep on the ground itself. It says you shouldn't even sit at a table when you have Jagannath prasad, because, we should be so humble and so, when we take the prasad. There are many instructions are given. The mood is we should not be the bogi. We're not the bogi. The bogi is meant for Krishna. But this is what keeps us in the material world. Attachment to bogi and Aishwarya. Aishwarya means opulence. We want to drive a Mercedes-Benz. You live in a townhouse or like that. We have all these attachments. Bhoga and Aishwarya, Prasaktanam, Krishna says in the Gita. And what do they do? They take away your intelligence. You lose your intelligence, your equanimity. Devotees have to live a little bit simply. Some devotees have more, some devotees have less. That's okay, but you have to live a little bit simply. If you get too much caught up in Bhoga and Aishwarya, then you will forget Krishna. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in this purport's not here, but he makes a commentary in the purport. he says that this is what makes everyone mad in this world. And then he analyzes it. He says it's based on the Sanskrit. It says Sri Aishwarya Madon Naham Unmada. So he says that it begins with Shri. Shri means, can be translated as wealth. And remember when we studied, maybe a couple of years ago, the pastime of Manigriva and Nalokovara. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that comment. Jama, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shribir. Four intoxicating things in this material world. You have a big birth. Aishwarya means you have money. Shruta means you're very learned. Shribir means you're very beautiful or handsome.
Right.
You have those four things. But he says of the four, the most intoxicating is the
Aishwarya, the wealth.
Money is very intoxicating. Right? If you have money, you become very deluded. It says you become mad. Very intoxicated. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, from wealth, from Sri comes Aishwarya. Aishwarya means power. Then you can do what you want. That's why people want money, because then you can do what you want. I can go here, I can do this, there's no limitation, I can eat whatever I want, I can do whatever I want. I can have whatever I want. And that sense of power that deludes us and makes us attached to the material world. That's why for devotees are better if they live simply, because then you don't become so infatuated by the material world. I know myself, you get a little bit of wealth, very distracting for the consciousness. You start thinking about it day or night. Last year I got some inheritance, right? I asked you, I asked Krishna Kataparu, I asked everyone, Yogi, I asked everyone I knew. What do I do with the money? What do I do with the money? I couldn't stop thinking about it. Couple of weeks. What do I do with the money? What do I do with the money? I got to invest it, make more money. Like that. Finally, I worked out what to do with it, and then once I worked it out, bang. Now I don't think about it. It's not there anymore. It's not in my mind. But when attachment that we get in the material world, when you become attached to Aishwarya, which means the power which comes from material facility, it's very deluding to the consciousness. So devotees, we have to be very careful. Not that we can't have these things, but they have to be used in Krishna's service, otherwise they become bewildering. And we see, sometimes devotees, they get bewildered. And you see other devotees, they use it in Krishna's service, they then become bewildered. So it says, from Sri comes Aishwarya, and from Aishwarya comes Mada. Mada means madness or intoxication. You become intoxicated. You know when someone's intoxicated? They say anything, they do anything. That's what you become like. Oh, I can do whatever I want. Like that. Even I know one devotee, he had some money. He's a little bit wealthy. But he used to say things about other people, other devotees even. Speak down on them. It's like, I have... It gives you like an intoxication. So we have to be careful. Even amongst us, amongst devotees, you get some money, but then it's like a feeling I'm better than others. And then you can sometimes speak down on other devotees or judge them. You don't see them for their devotional merit, but you see them more from the material standpoint. So it's intoxicating. And then it leads to unaham. And unaham means, Sri means wealth, leads to power, leads to intoxication, which leads to bondage. You think you're enjoying, but actually you're bound in this world. The material world, it says sex life, which you could say is like bhoga, and Aishwarya, which means money. These two things, the Prabhupada writes, you have to be very careful of these two things. Money and the opposite sex. The whole pastime of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu. Right? Wealth and the opposite sex. These two things are very bewildering. Right? And then we're bound in this world. We're trapped in this world. We're in a cage, but the cage has golden bars. So as long as the cage has golden bars, you think, it's not so bad. That's what it's like being in the material world. It's not so bad. But we're stuck. We're away from Krishna. So it's not a good thing. Comparatively, like yesterday, we had our Sunday feast program at the farm. Some nice people came. I was preaching to one man, and he said, my life's pretty good. He's quite a wealthy man, and has material facilities. The things are quite good. I said, yes, okay, that's there. You have your satisfaction, but I said comparatively, if you compare it to the bliss of what you would experience in the spiritual world, then it's insignificant. It's only because we're not really experiencing that we think this is significant or satisfying. But actually, we're just in a cage with gold bars, that's all. You're still in a cage, you know. And sooner or later, the pleasure disappears. Suffering will come. Isn't it? Sometimes we suffer. It's happened to me once or twice. I suffered in this material world. Hare Krishna. Any points? Okay. Haihaya, Nahusha, Vena, Ravana, Naraka, and many other rulers of demigods, men and demons, fell from their elevated positions because of infatuation with material opulence. Rasik, would you
like to read it? As described by Srimira Swami, because Kandinya stole the desired cow of Lord Parshurama's father, Jamadagni, Parshurama killed him and his imprudent sons. Nahusha became puffed up when he temporarily assumed the post of Indra. When out of pride, Nahusha ordered some brahmanas to carry him in a palanquin to an illicit meeting with Lord Indra's chaste wife Sachi. The brahmanas made him fall out of his position and become an old man. King Vena was similarly mad, and when he was insulted, when he insulted the brahmanas, they killed him by loud incantations of the syllable hum. Ravana was a famous ruler of the Rakshasas, but out of lust, he kidnapped Mother Sita, and thus her husband Lord Ramachandra killed him. Naraka was a ruler of the Daityas who dared to steal Mother Aditi's earrings, and for his offense he was also killed. Thus, throughout history, powerful leaders have fallen from their positions because they became intoxicated with their so-called opulence.
Any points?
Examples of people who have been intoxicated by their power, like Ravana and Naraka.
Yeah, a very nice purport, very nice commentary. Sridhar Swami's commentary, very beautiful explanation. So the basic premise or the basic understanding is that if we commit offences, it leads to ruination in devotional service. We have to be very careful about offending. Because it leads to the downward path. It's very difficult. If we ever commit offences, sometimes we do, knowingly or unknowingly. You know, sometimes you commit an offence, you know you've committed an offence. Sometimes we don't mean to, but the devotee's offended. You know, we say something or we do something. You know, we didn't even mean to offend, but somehow we did. And the devotee's upset. But as soon as that happens, you have to rectify it. You have to go to the devotee and you have to rectify. Say, sorry, Prabhu. You know, offer obeisances, beg forgiveness. And then Krishna Chakra Thakur says you have to serve the devotee. Do service for them. You know, make them pacify. And then there's knowing, sometimes unknowingly. Unknowingly, we don't know what we've done. But the taste is disappearing in our chanting or like that. So then you have to meditate very clearly and very deeply, and Krishna will reveal to you what that offense is. And you see, it can affect anyone, even Prabhupada. You know, we don't know any pastime of Prabhupada, but yeah, even devotees on that level can, you know. The famous pastime is Rupa Goswami. You know, he didn't mean to, but one devotee got offended, and then his meditation disappeared, couldn't see Krishna and Radha anymore. Right? And then Sanatana Goswami said, you must have offended someone. And then he went to one devotee, and the devotee said, yes, I felt a little bit hurt. He said, oh, Prabhu, please forgive me. And then, you know, it was Rupa Goswami himself. Yeah. So offenses had effect. You have to be very careful about offending the devotees. And if you make offense, then this is the test. The test is that you will beg forgiveness. Because it's very difficult for devotees to beg forgiveness. In the material world, we become very proud. And then even though we know we did something wrong, sometimes it's very difficult for us to just become humble and to beg forgiveness. And if you don't do it, then, you know, it's difficult to advance. So it's a test for all of us. Doesn't matter if you've been a devotee a long time or a short time, you have to beg forgiveness if you make some offense. Any points? Understanding that this material body and everything connected with it have a beginning and an end, worship me by Vedic sacrifices and with clear intelligence protect your subjects in accordance with the principles of religion. So this is what it means to be a leader. A leader means you have to set an example. Acha, pracha. Both have to be there. You can't just talk if you don't do it. You tell everyone, oh, do it. You don't do it. Where's the inspiration? Everyone will lose faith. You don't do it. You tell, do it. You know, the story of Gandhi. You know, the mother came and said, tell my son not to eat sweets. Right? Gandhi said, come back in 1 week. Right, and then after 1 week of him not eating sweets, he said, now you don't eat sweets. So he said, you know, I have to do it myself. So we have to practice. That's leadership. Leadership means you can't just say it, you have to do it. You see, like Radha Swami, like such a powerful, powerful leader. And then, yeah, they went on one parikram, and it was like an 8 kilometer walk to get to the... it must have been like a lake or a river, where, like a holy place to take bath. So, you know, they said, oh, Maharaj, you know, get the jeep, we'll drive you there, and everyone else will walk. He said, no, I will walk. They got out, walked 8 kilometers, led all the devotees. You know, walked for 8 kilometers, it's a long way. It must take, it's an hour to walk like that. They walked, took bath, and then walked back. You know, show the example. That's real leadership. That's when it becomes inspirational. Or another example is Alexander the Great. Have you heard of him? Alexander the Great. Yeah. Yeah, he conquered from Macedonia, Greece, all the way to India. Conquered everything. Like that. Then, yeah, lost it all, but he conquered Alexander. So one time he was in the desert, they were crossing, and he's the leader and they're all marching. And everyone was very thirsty, so they found some water, and they came to give. They thought, give to the leader because he, you know, he needs to have it. And then there's only one cup of water, you know, and all these soldiers were there. So he got the water, and he just went, tipped it on the ground, in front of everyone, and threw the cup on the ground. Said, if you will not drink, I will not drink. That's leadership. Then everyone was inspired. Oh, he will do it, so we will also do it. That's leadership. So it means we have to become like that. We have to show the example as leaders. And then another facet of leadership is that you have to make sure that everyone that's following you is practicing. It means you have to get on their case. That's leadership. And a good leader has to be always. It's like when you have kids. You have to be on the case. Come on. Like today, my daughter, you know, today's public holiday, so she's at home. So I said, come on, practice flute. I have to get on her case. You know, because she just wants to, you know, space out and not to just play in. You know, practice flute. She's a very good flute player. So you have to practice. Do it. So you have to discipline. That means if people are following you, you have to make sure they are practicing. That's a good leader. Yeah? A good leader inspires, but sometimes also has to correct. Huh? Come on time for class. This is leadership. You can't just walk in whenever you want. Even when I'm giving this class is good because, you know, everyone comes to this class because they want to come. So devotees don't fall asleep. I don't have problems with devotees falling asleep. But like you give class in the morning in the temple, you know, devotees fall asleep. It's like it's an accepted norm. It's okay to fall asleep. You know, you're giving class and someone's going. All right. it's become like an accepted thing. Oh, it's okay to do that. It's not okay to do it. Yeah, if I'm giving class in the morning and someone's doing that, I stop the class. I look at them. And I say, Prabhu, go and take rest. Stand up, take rest, or sit up or wake up. You know, just put them on the spot. Make them feel uncomfortable. And then, you know, you wake up because everyone is looking at you. So you can wake up like that. So. And just say, Prabhu, if you're tired, no problem. Just go and take rest. No big deal. But don't sleep in front of the deities. Don't sleep while the Bhagavatam has been spoken. That's an offense. So that means we have to do. Leadership means you have to make everyone accountable. That's leadership. Are you doing? That's why the guru chastises the disciple. Why? He has to make you accountable. Did you do it? Do it. You know, my Guru Maharaj used to do it all the time. It was his disappearance day the other day on Thursday. So we had at the farm Jai Sachi Prabhu and God Brothers Bazi with Cameron. Very informal. You know, we don't read offerings. We just speak. We just remember him. We all just speak. And sometimes Vyasa Puja is that, you know, I'm just being a little frank. I don't mean to be offensive, but sometimes they're very boring. Yeah, everyone said, Guru Maharaj, please set my humble obeisances all glories to Prabhupada. You are the ocean of mercy. You know, like that. Okay, that's nice. And then next devotee, Guru Maharaj, please set my goes on for like 2 hours. You know, it's like sometimes you just feel like, sometimes you just feel like, you know, speak from the heart. I went to my Guru Maharaj's Vyasa Puja live in 1993 in Fiji. He was in Fiji and I was there live with him. And we got up, you know, first devotee, God brother got up, the guy, and he said, no offerings. He said, speak from the heart. He was there. No offerings. Everyone had to speak just from the heart. You couldn't read your offering. Like that. So, I mean, up to you what you want to do. That's, you know, your system. But I think when it becomes more like spontaneous, it becomes more relishable. So we were speaking and we're just remembering our guru, you know, and so many pastimes where he corrected us. You know, I remember being up there, you know, with him and during pastimes. I remember in Sydney one time I walked in. Gave him his washing. It's like, you know, any other person, you give the washing to them, that's the end of it. But then, you know, giving the washing is the beginning of a whole leela. Now he looks at every single piece and it's like, you know, why is this one not ironed properly and like a whole thing? And, you know, I remember one time up there and then he used to wear silk, like this silk, and then he would not... did not like it ironed. You know, it just had to be hung nicely and then given like that. Because if you iron it, it deteriorates the cloth much more quickly. So the devotee ironed. So called her up, you know, and she was like shaking. Called a Chincharupa Mataji up. You know, she was shaking. So everyone was there. Called, you know, half the temple up. How come my cloth has been ironed? Turned into like a whole pastime. Whole, you know. But why does the guru do that? Because he's training us. He wants to make us accountable. You have to be accountable. You know? And the manager who ironed the cloth, he was very upset with her, but he was more upset with his secretary who had given the cloth to her and somehow she had ironed it and he'd given the instruction, tell her not to iron it. And he's very upset. He's just, in other words, he's just making us accountable. I mean, it's not the end of the world, just some iron cloth or whatever. But he's making us again. That's devotional service. So a leader has to make their followers accountable. People don't like saying these things. Oh, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to offend you. No, you have to say it. Come on. Do it properly. Do the service properly. Come to class on time. Stay awake. All these things. Any points? As you live your lives, begetting generations of progeny and encountering happiness and distress, birth and death, always keep your minds fixed on me. Be detached from the body and everything connected to it. Remaining self-satisfied, steadfastly keep your vows while concentrating your minds fully on me. In this way, you will ultimately attain me, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus instructed the kings, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all the worlds, engaged Malay, oh sorry, male, okay. Let's see. I was thinking, what's that word? Engage male and female servants in bathing and grooming them. So it's a nice point that I remember once again when my guru came, it was 1990, and I'd taken shelter of him, and then he came to Melbourne. And I'd written a letter. I'd met him in 1989 when I joined, and I said, I want to become your disciple. And he said, okay, when I come, then I'll give you initiation. So then he came first time. And the first morning he was here, he was chanting japa. I walked in, he said, come, sit next to me. So I sat next to him, and then I was chanting japa next to him. And then he was preaching to me during the japa. And he said, one of the very first instructions he gave me, he said, there are two ways to serve guru, Vani and Bapu. Vani means the instruction. And Prabhupada always tells us Vani is more important. But it's a very important point to understand. While the guru is physically present on the earth, you get as much Bapu association as you can. Because when the guru is not there, that will carry you. So you must get the Bapu. You must serve the Bapu. The Bapu means the form. And how do you serve the Vapu? You do menial services. You know, so many little things you can do. You know, menial services. You know? So our spiritual masters, the senior Vaishnavas, those who protect us and guide us, we must do menial services for them. And that's how we advance in Krishna consciousness. So you see here, these are kings. Kings means the king is the leader. That's one of the problems we have in modern society. We don't have kings. You know, we have stupid politicians who have no idea how to rule, how to govern, how to be selfless in their decision making, how to rule for the spiritual benefit of society. The main concern is the economic benefit, and it's obviously not working, is it? Because not everyone has money, not everyone's happy who's got money, and there's so many problems. So, you know, they don't know how to rule. So a king is someone who is qualified and he must be served. So in the absence of the kings, we serve the maharajas. You know, we serve the sannyasis, the gurus, the advanced devotees. By serving them and doing menial service, our heart becomes develops the correct, it's like a field being cultivated. You know, so the heart becomes cultivated properly. So then the instructions will bear fruit when they give us instructions. So that's why we have to render the service. You know, Prabhupada once said that the most important verse in the Gita is chapter 4. 34. Tadvidi. Pranipatina. Render service. Inquire confidentially, right, and accept the instructions of the guru. So service must be sevaya, upadekshanti taken off. So there must be seva. Why do you just do seva? So then when you ask the questions and you hear from the guru, the heart is properly cultivated. So then it enters like that. Just like I was listening to one guru speak. He was giving a lecture, I was listening to it, and he made a good point. He said, everyone comes to me and asks me questions. Oh Maharaj, what about this? Oh Maharaj, what about that? Explain to me this tattva, explain to me that tattva. He said, but they never come and say, Maharaj, is there any service I can do? It's always, Maharaj, you know, tell me about the three modes of nature and like all the, you know, the one, all these things, but why don't you just come? And he said, if you don't cultivate the right service attitude, he can say whatever he wants, but it won't enter the, you won't understand. So that's why here, Krishna says, hey, serve the kings. You know, massage their bodies, bathe them, do all these menial services. O descendant of Bharata, the Lord then had King Sahadev honor them with offerings of clothing, jewelry, garlands, and sandalwood paste, all suitable for royalty.
Sahadev was not with them, right?
It's not that Sahadev. Yeah, it's the son of Jarasandha. Yeah, same name, but different person. After they had been properly bathed and adorned, Lord Krishna saw to it that they had dined on excellent food. He also presented them with various items befitting the pleasure of kings, such as betel nut. So the basic principle is you should always offer the best. Someone comes to your home, offer them the best. You know, you don't offer them the cheap stuff and keep the good stuff in the cupboard. Maybe you do that. But that's not the way to serve the guest. You give the best thing, right? And then you will take the second best thing. That's the Vedic culture. So that should be the basic principle. As Krishna is demonstrating, you know, offer nice things to the Lord. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, he was extremely renounced, you know, himself, very renounced. But he said the devotees should have the best of everything because they're Krishna's servants. They should have the best. Everything's the best should be given. So we should always give the best to the devotees because they're serving Krishna. They're the topmost people in society. Okay. Honored by Lord Mukunda and freed from tribulation, the kings shone splendidly, their earrings gleaming, just as the moon and other celestial bodies shine brilliantly in the sky at the end of the rainy season. So when you perform bhakti, you will become effulgent. Then the Lord arranged for the kings to be seated on chariots drawn by fine horses and adorned with jewels and gold. And pleasing them with gracious words, he sent them off to their own kingdoms. Thus liberated from all difficulty by Krishna, the greatest of all personalities, the kings departed. And as they went, they thought only of him, the Lord of the universe, and of his wonderful deeds. The kings told their ministers and other associates what the personality of Godhead had done, and then they diligently carried out the orders he had imparted to them. After arranging for Bhima Sen to kill Jarasandha, Lord Keshava accepted worship from King Sahadev and then departed with the two sons of Prita. When they arrived at Indraprastha, the victorious heroes blew their conch shells, bringing joy to their well-wishing friends and sorrow to their enemies. The residents of Indraprastha were very pleased to hear that sound, for they had understood that now the king of Magadha had been put to rest. King Yudhishthira felt that his desires were now fulfilled. Bhima, Arjuna and Janardana offered their respects to the king and informed him fully about what they had done. Upon hearing their account of the great favor, Lord Keshava had mercifully shown him, King Dharmaraj shed tears of ecstasy. He felt such love that he could not say anything. So in the very last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, four things will be there. Wherever there is Krishna, the supreme mystic. Wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will be victory, extraordinary power, morality, and opulence. Four things will be there. Wherever Krishna is, wherever Arjuna is, and you see in this past life, extraordinary power. To kill Jarasandha took extraordinary power. Why did they win? Because they had morality. And Krishna gave them extraordinary opulence. Indraprastha was the most extraordinary city of any city. And victory was there. So these things, all these benedictions come when we serve Krishna. So, any points? Okay. So tomorrow we'll begin chapter 74. Srila Prabhupada.